This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Does it ever feel like you're a marketing professional just
speaking into the void?
But with LinkedIn ads, you can know you're reaching the right decision makers, a network of 130 million of them, in fact. You can even target buyers by job title, industry, company, seniority, skills, and did I say job title? See how you can avoid the void and reach the right buyers with LinkedIn ads. Spend $250 on your first campaign and get a free $250 credit for the next one. Get started at linkedin.com/campaign. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Antler Up podcast, brought to you by Tethered, the world's best saddle hunting gear. And we got a great show for you all today. You're listening to the Antler Up podcast, where we dive into archery, hunting, and the mindset needed to elevate your game. Join us as we explore the latest strategies and gear to help you become the best hunter you can be, both in and out of the woods. Tethered is a team of saddle hunting fanatics with a passionate addiction to whitetail hunting. Designing and engineering products to be a more efficient and confident hunter, Tethered produces the most mobile, stealthy, and safest elevated hunting gear on the planet. Built by saddle hunters for the saddle hunter. Head over to tethernation.com to see for yourself what exactly I'm talking about. When you hit the woods, there's no room for second-rate gear. That's why I trust Huntworth. They build high-performance hunting gear that keeps you concealed, comfortable, and locked in without the ridiculous price tag. Whether it's lightweight gear for those sweaty September sits, rock-solid mid-season layers, or insulated late-season killers, Huntworth has the lineup to keep you grinding all year long. And every season, they're dropping new gear that's built for serious hunters who demand more out of what they wear. So if you're tired of paying for a logo instead of performance, it's time to upgrade. Head over to huntworthgear.com, check out the full lineup, and hunt prepared, hunt hard, hunt with Huntworth. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to this week's episode of the Antler Up podcast. And today I'm joined by President and CEO of the NDA. I have Nick Pinizzotto. Nick, welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, awesome. So we are just beginning college football season, Nick, and I follow you on Instagram. I have for the last couple years, and I think I could remember going back and seeing some posts in years previous, but I saw it this past weekend. Penn State opened up. We had a pretty easy win against Nevada, and there were some pretty good matchups going on, but ranked number two, I hate coming in ranked that high. I would rather come in under the radar a little bit, but so were you able to make it to this game or this past weekend?
Yeah, we were able to make it. It was a sort of a last minute decision, but we're able to secure some tickets. Thank goodness for sites like StubHub and similar. I wish that I could guarantee my presence more to justify season tickets, but you know, with scheduling and so on, it's just hard to do. So the route has always been just to try to find a ticket, you know, leading up to a game we want to go to. And yeah, it was a beautiful, incredibly beautiful day for the opening day of the season up there at Happy Valley. And the drive alone, I live in the western part of the state in Indiana, Pennsylvania. And the drive alone is worth it, and then let alone to get there and experience. Yeah, call. I've had the fortune of being at many stadiums, but there's nothing quite like Beaver Stadium on game day. So, yeah, it was a great time.
I would be a homer 100% by saying I couldn't agree more with you. So my ties to Penn State, Nick, are I have 2 degrees from Penn State. I did my undergrad there, where I studied in hotel restaurant institutional management, my first degree, and then I went back and received a kinesiology degree with the certification to teach, and that's where I'm at today, where I'm a teacher just outside of where I live currently, which is actually State College, Pennsylvania. So yeah. I'm a teacher there at the high school, so I get a chance to see Penn State all the time, and it's pretty cool. And you know, last year was a pretty remarkable year, and my freshman year was actually the 2005 season when we got back into the things with you know, kind of putting that jolt back into the program with Mike Robb and Derek Williams and Justin King, mm-hmm. and we ended up beating Florida State in that crazy Orange Bowl game. So it was a great time to be a student. And, you know, when I went back too, we had some really good teams. And, but it's a, like you said, there's no place like it. And it's such a really cool atmosphere. Do you have any other ties to Penn State University or for any reason, or just, you know, a fan or anything along those lines?
Yeah. So I just grew up a Penn State fan. When I was a little kid, my mother for Christmas got me this little football outfit. It was a Penn State uniform. It came with a plastic helmet. And immediately at that point, I just became a Penn State fan. And I rode that out and, you know, just remained a very loyal fan to Penn State. And I didn't go, and interestingly, I don't know why, but I didn't end up going to school there. I guess there were reasons at the time. But anyway, yeah, and it's just an incredible place in the facilities. So I coach high school football, and so go up to Penn State each year. They host a big 7-on-7 tournament in the summer, mm-hmm. in their facilities, and you get to go through the locker rooms and into the weight rooms and hang out with a lot of the players and James Franklin. And it's an incredible experience. You know, it's supposed to be for the kids, but I think I'm just as giddy as they are. So
that's awesome. So do you still coach to this day?
I do. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's, you know, it's tough with the job I have. Is very busy. So occasionally you do have to miss and you have to prioritize, but, I'm pretty consistent, and, I coach football and baseball, and I just love, it's really just the enjoyment of seeing kids improve, not just as athletes, but as, individuals, and, you know, coach at the high school varsity level. So, you know, to go from being, you know, children when you get them as ninth graders to young men, you know, that have jobs and responsibilities and so on by the time they graduate is just incredibly fulfilling. And it's a nice departure from, you know, the day to day of work. It's a way to give back a little bit. And you teaching school, you know, all about this. Yep. And so you have a passion for it as well, or you wouldn't do it.
Well, it's funny you say coaching baseball as well to go along with football. That was my gig for many years. I recently have I haven't been coaching the last 3 years, but prior to that, I was about a decade in between coaching middle school football as a head coach there for a couple of years within the State College community, as well as our varsity baseball coach for a couple of years as well. So I know exactly where you're going with all of that and all the hard work and the dedication that you put towards our student athletes. And it's a unsung position, no doubt about it, but it's awesome to hear that you still do that and make an impact in these young people's lives and all that stuff on top of doing what you're doing for your day-to-day job. That I just find that so cool. And I remember seeing that in the spring, like you would make a post here or there about baseball, and I was like,
I have to talk to Nick. Like, I'm destined to have a conversation with him because it seemed like it, like you said, it coached as far as the baseball things go, goes. So I was like, we have so much in common between the coaching side of things, the deer hunting side of things, Pennsylvania, Penn State. I'm like, we have to get on the lineup at some point in time. So yeah, I appreciate you doing that.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's, you got to have something beyond your day to day, I think, in order to stay sane. I'm not one of those people. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love what I do, and I'm blessed to have the job that I do. But, you know, what people sometimes don't realize is it's still very much a job. And so because of that, you still, I think, to be well-rounded, you have to have other things to, you know, to do in your life that you enjoy that aren't just the job. If you're just doing the job 24/7, that's tough. You're not going to be as successful at your job. And so I think keeping things fresh is important.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Well, Nick, the theme of this episode is going to be mainly the state of America's deer and deer hunting, where we're at right now. And, you know, we had some other of your colleagues on for this whole month, and where the order is going to air, I'm not 100% sure. I know, like, as the date that we're recording this, Lindsey Thomas Jr.'s episode is going to be the first one. He's going to kick off the Inside the NDA September month and bleeds into October as well, just because I was able to get five of you on, which was phenomenal. And I appreciate you guys all doing this. And we all had some really fun conversations so far. So I'm excited to get your point of view on things. You know, Nick, I guess we just talked about you coaching and being a loyal Penn State fan. You know, for people that don't know, like, what, and you were saying about living on the western side of Pennsylvania, what more, like, did you grow up here your whole life, I'm assuming then? And like, how did you, you know, I guess, get into the position, and how long have you held this position now?
Yeah, you know, and it's funny, you'd think that'd be the easiest question to answer, but it's in a lot of ways, it's not. I'm not real good at talking about myself, but I'll do my best. Yeah, so I grew up, and I was born in western Pennsylvania. Actually, I was born in Punxsutawney, me and Punxsutawney Phil there. Didn't live there long, but didn't move too far from there. So Indiana County, Pennsylvania, which sits right on the edge of the mountains here. We've got some pretty high hills, you know, not quite what you have there in State College, but significant, you know, on the edge of the Appalachians here. And, you know, anybody that would know something about this area recognizes that it's very rural, heavy agricultural. You know, when I was growing up as a kid, I just thought everybody hunted, girls and boys. You know, it wasn't until later in life that I figured out that only about 5% of the people hunt, which blew me away. I mean, I just thought they were all in my neighborhood. But so that culture was just, you know, that came natural. It's something that we all did. For example, in my high school, we had a fly tying club. You know, so there were kids that went to ski club. That wasn't me, but I went to fly tying club. And I just always had this real passion for the outdoors. You know, we didn't have the electronic distractions that we have now. And so it literally was, I'm Generation X, and everything, you know, people hear and see all the memes about Gen Xers. It's almost all true. It really is how we grew up. You know, we were kicked out the door to go play all day and night. And for me and my brother and, you know, other friends, it was, you couldn't get us out of the local stream. We're building dams and catching fish and bringing them and stocking them in our little dams and, you know, going out scouting deer. It was just constant. And so I just had a love for the outdoors and conservation. And, you know, I tell the story, when I was getting ready to graduate high school, they kind of want you to have a plan. And I just knew I needed to go to college. No one in my family had ever gone to college before me. And I just thought, I know I need to go, but I'm not sure what for. And I went down to our guidance office, and they had this little program you could go through. And every time I did it, it just kept coming back that I needed to be a farmer. So I started to think this thing was rigged, because 2/3 of our school was already farmers. You know, I'm thinking they just want us all to be farmers. But eventually I settled on natural resource conservation, and initially had a focus on water quality. But I always was a huge fisherman and a huge deer hunter. The idea of actually having a job working in fish or wildlife just seemed far-fetched, but I thought, you know, you might as well go for it, because what do you have to lose? And so I did spend the majority of the first part of my career in actual stream and river restoration and protection work, so fisheries work. probably the first, and a little bit of upland habitat, but I would say about the first 15 years of my career was in that. Before I got a really cool opportunity, I worked with an organization called the Western Pennsylvania Conservancy for 11 years. I started and ran our watershed conservation program. And when that, we had a lot of success there. And because of that, I got an opportunity to go be the CEO at Delta Waterfowl Foundation in, over in Bismarck, North Dakota. And so here I was, a kid growing up in Western Pennsylvania that only even probably only been on an airplane two or three times, getting offered this job in North Dakota, and which seemed like the other, you know, the other side of the world. But I took a leap of faith, went over there and did that for a couple of years. And from there, then moved a little closer back to home and became the CEO of the Sportsman's Alliance, working on anti-hunting type issues or bad legislation or policy that impacted hunting. And then, you know, always still being in love with deer. Deer hunting was my number one passion. I'm a big fly fisherman too. And, you know, being from State College, you know all about the great opportunities there. And so I got approached about this idea for an organization called the National Deer Alliance. And what the National Deer Alliance was going to be a spinoff from the Quality Deer Management Association, but 100% focused on policy. And a little secret about me is I'm known a lot for working on policy issues, but I actually do not, I'll say it politely, I do not love policy and politics. And so I kind of begrudgingly took a leap of faith again and said, okay, I'm willing to try this opportunity. I was the first ever CEO of the organization, a CEO of nobody, by the way. I didn't have any employees initially until I eventually hired a guy from State College, a guy by the name of Torrin Miller.
Yep.
Who went to Bellefonte High School there.
I do know Torrin. Torrin was actually one of our first individuals I had on our podcast.
Yeah, and great choice, right? And so Torrin came then and worked with me, and it was him and I running the alliance. And then after about 4 years of that, the QDMA was going through some major transition and recrafting. They're talking about recrafting the organization, and I became involved in discussions about reuniting the National Deer Alliance with the QDMA to create the National Deer Association. We could have an entire podcast about talking about how all that happened, but it happened over the course of a year, and people didn't know it was happening, which was kind of cool. We did a lot of work under the cover of darkness and behind the scenes, and then we're able to roll out the new organization. And, you mentioned some of the people you've had a chance to interview five of us. I am extremely fortunate to have the team that we have here, and you know that after having talked to them, and people will know that after having listened to them. It is just an incredibly talented and dedicated team that are working on behalf of deer and hunters and wildlife habitat. And they, the people of the National Deer Association, are what make it click. And so my job is to put them in the best position to be successful, and then, to be honest with you, stay out of their way and not mess it up, because they're so talented and so passionate about what they do. So that's a long-winded answer. It's been a long road to get here. I'm very lucky. Obviously I did a few decent things along the way to get the opportunity, but really it was mostly just letting good people, good talented people, be good talented people and not trying to get in their way. And I've been lucky enough to ride that wave to this point. So that's kind of the story.
That's pretty awesome. And like, looking back, and I noticed, like, you've been in that position when it was even like the National Deer Alliance, and you've been involved with deer with whitetail. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but at least since 2015, is that correct?
Well, yeah, this would be the ninth. This is the ninth year of being with the NDA, either the association or the alliance. So yeah, you're looking at about almost 10 years there. Prior to that, much like yourself, I had a podcast and was a blog writing about deer. I came through the QDMA ranks, frankly. I learned a lot of what I know now about deer from whenever I was in my early 20s and joining the QDMA before. When I first met Kip Adams, for example, I met him at a thing in Harrisburg, and I was like, who the heck's this guy? Like, I want to be like him someday. You know, which is funny. I tell Kip that story now when he just got hired there. So I go way back and I went through Deer Steward 1 and Deer Steward 2 and just inundated myself because I was such a deer nerd. And so it's really cool to have come up through those ranks and then to find myself sitting where I am now, which is, you know, it's kind of crazy when you think about it. So I try not to think about it and just keep my head down and keep things rolling.
So. And that's what I've asked everybody that was already on the podcast and how many years they've been in this field of work. And it's just, it's astonishing to hear how many years collectively everybody has together. And I'm just so like in awe of that. And just like how lucky like myself and other individuals like we are to have individuals like you and your team really being a leading force and getting out there and doing, making an impact. And I can't help but, like I said to Elizabeth the other day, I can't help but want to be a part of it in some form or fashion, whether that means being a part of a Field of Fork program or lending a hand. And you just can't help but feel that after speaking with it. Like prior to that, it was something always on my radar. It's just, man, I want to give back, right? It's just always, I feel like there's some point of a quality person, a deer hunter in general, you just always have that little, whether it's taking a kid out, taking your own child out or something along those lines or introducing it to somebody. But again, like after interviewing your four colleagues, it's just like, man, you want to be involved. And it's just so neat to hear everybody's stories and their avenue of what they're passionate about when it comes to whitetail and deer hunting. It's just so neat to see. And I think you all have such a wealth of knowledge. And I, you know, just from, you know, as a deer hunter, thank you for doing what you guys do. So, you know, to kind of bleed into that next aspect that I think is a really good I shouldn't say transition, Nick, but like when you were saying you've been doing the whitetail thing for so long, even now, and doing those stewardship programs, what moment first made you realize like deer hunting was bigger than just the hunt itself?
Mm. Yeah, I love that question. And, you know, I can tell just by talking to you, you're someone that kind of, you certainly get the big picture, right? It's not, and I tell people this that want to get involved with the NDA, I said, if you're getting involved with the NDA because it's about how much you can take, it's not going to work. It needs to be how much you can give. And, you know, that's what we believe as a team and as a staff. And I think that shines through. And so, you know, it's interesting thinking about that question. For me, I think it happened really early. Okay. Growing up a conservationist, which is what I'm a hunter, but I hunt partially because of the conservation value of hunting. And so, I've always believed in big picture. I've always believed in a healthy environment and healthy habitat. And so, that's why I chose the career path that I did. I recognize, you know, for deer hunting, for example, a lot of people are so focused on the animal itself. Okay, they're focused on the deer, whereas myself and I think the folks at the NDA as a whole, we're focused on everything around that animal, and understanding that if we take care of everything around that animal, that great deer are a symptom of taking care of habitat, and having good policy, and having educated hunters. If you have all those things, you have great deer. And by the way, you're benefiting a whole host of other species and other conservation, putting good conservation on the ground. So I can't say it of a particular time, but you know, I would say all the way back into I was thinking about it when I was still in high school, but it started to click. You know, you go on to college and you get a little bit of a higher level of learning and hear from people that have experience, and you get out and see a little bit of the world. It doesn't take long for it to really take off.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love to hear that. So like when we think of the state of deer, where we are at now, what is that current state of deer hunting across the U.S.?
You know, it's a little bit of both. So in some ways, this is the greatest time to ever be a deer hunter because people they're more educated than ever. I'd like to think we have something to do with that. There's so many more resources out there. I can't tell you how much time I spend still just watching YouTube at night. And I don't even care who the person is, because any person that's been out there doing it might have some little piece of knowledge or experience that I can learn from. And so there I am working for the NDA, but I'm still watching, you know, Tom Smith out there who I've never met before. It might have something good that I want to hear about. Mm-hmm. So I think in a lot of ways it's better than ever. There are a lot of deer. There are better quality bucks than ever before. We shoot now a higher percentage of mature deer than immature deer. Growing up in Pennsylvania, especially when I did, you're quite a bit younger than I am, but it used to, the whole deal was, did you fill your buck tag? Nobody really cared, you know, how big it was. It was just, did you fill your buck tag? And that was the focus. If you saw a deer with an antler, you were going to shoot it. And nowadays, people want the opposite. They actually want older age class deer to chase. And the highest percentage of people ever are satisfied with maybe not getting one every year, but knowing that every second or third year they're going to get one, it's probably going to be pretty nice. They're pretty happy about that. And so when you look across the country, the state of deer hunting is actually pretty darn good. Now, of course, saying all that, we can't ignore the elephant in the room. I mean, right now we're in EHD season, and we're seeing some terrible outbreaks, and not too far from here, frankly. Eastern Ohio and some other places are kind of ground zero this year. So we hate to see that. And then, of course, chronic wasting disease is a big issue. You know, it's tough for us because a lot of times we're kind of the bad news people. We are not just a hunting organization that's going to come out and tell you all the great, wonderful things about hunting and pretend that CWD doesn't exist. We have a responsibility as a conservation organization to talk about all the things, even if they're not popular. And we hate having to talk about CWD, but we have to do it. We have a responsibility. And as we continue to see that disease spread across the country, and here in Pennsylvania in particular, to watch what has happened in South Central Pennsylvania and how it's spreading, and how, you know, they're getting close to the point where every other deer that's shot's going to be CWD is going to have CWD. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you might have a lot of deer, but we have this sort of ugly shadow that's out there that we have to deal with too. So, it's the good and the bad, but overall, it's still a pretty good day to be a deer hunter.
Yeah. I would agree with you in that sense. And I think too, a lot of your colleagues would echo that just from talking to Kip. And I know Kip is very passionate about, and Kip and I had that conversation about the CWD and beyond that. You know, following that up with Nick, where does Pennsylvania fit in that picture overall? Like, are we ahead? Are we behind? Are we right in line, you think, as far as the state of deer hunting?
With regard to deer hunting in general?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're very fortunate here. I mean, I used to go travel all over the country and chase deer. I don't do that anymore. I mean, I hunt primarily here, and I go to Delaware as well. I have a good friend there that I hunt with in the Great Cypress Swamp.
You're saying it's like a forbidden word. I, for many years, just to give you a 5-second rundown, I hunted there a couple of years. And I talked about some potential really nice deer, and I was getting flooded with messages. Quit talking about Delaware. Quit talking about Delaware.
Oh yeah.
So I'm just messing with you, Nick. But I didn't mean to cut you off. It's a funny topic on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, and I go there primarily for the friendship. It's nice to shoot, you know, have an opportunity to shoot nice deer as well. But you know, Pennsylvania's in a good spot. We have a lot of deer. I think that you know, the deer team at the Pennsylvania Game Commission are a group of really dedicated, hardworking people that we've had the fortune of working with and getting to know. They always have the best interest of deer at heart. Even if they have to bring a message that's not popular with hunters, I think that they just do a really great job. And I have a lot of respect for those folks. And so we're lucky that way. Not every state has a qualified, dedicated state agency like we do here. The hunting passion in Pennsylvania is like the only other state that feels very similar is Michigan, although Wisconsin is right there. I mean, I don't mean this is no disrespect to anyone from another state listening to this, but there's just something a little bit different about Pennsylvania and those other states that I mentioned that it's hard to explain. Okay. But having seen it all, it's just unique. And sometimes that's good and sometimes it's bad because people are so passionate that they're blinded by that passion and they don't want to see some of the realities that are out there. Right. And so that makes it a little more challenging too. So we have a lot of great deer hunting culture here. a lot of deer and some really nice deer. I mean, I had the fortune the other day. I got my deer back from last year from the taxidermist, a beautiful 4.5-year-old buck. I've shot many Pope and Young class bucks here in Pennsylvania. You got to work for them, but they're out there. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not Ohio, you know, it's not Illinois or Iowa, but it's pretty darn good. And it's pretty cheap to hunt here too. So,
yeah. So let's talk about some wins in conservation and management. Like, what do you see as the biggest wins in the most recent years as far as like deer hunting? And this isn't just the state of Pennsylvania. It can be if that's where you're going to go with it. But, you know, just for deer hunting, what do you see as the biggest wins in recent years?
I'm going to take this maybe in a different direction than you might have been thinking, and that is the citizen conservationist. Second to none, deer hunters are going out on private land and putting really great habitat on the ground. They're doing it on their own dime, and it is making a significant impact across all of the whitetail landscape. And so I'd like to think that the QDMA and later the NDA have something to do with that, because we started talking about the importance of habitat. But landowners are doing that. Hunters are going out and doing it on their own dime and their own time. And it's really incredible. We just look at the people that come through our deer steward program, and we track how many acres those folks are managing, and it's significant. And then that doesn't even count the people that are doing it that you don't even know about.
Right.
And so you're making impact level improvements to the landscape out there by people who aren't being paid to do it. I think our agricultural practices too have improved over the years. Conservation programs, you know, nobody tends to be racing out to say the federal government did anything good, but there are some really good federal programs like CRP and some other conservation programs that have made a pretty good difference for deer. But I think the biggest thing is the fact that you know, John and Jane Citizen out there are willing to put blood, sweat, and tears and their own money into conservation on their land, and it's making an impact.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I think that's like a very overlooked, undervalued, and I say undervalued just because I'm not one that is getting in there, getting my hands dirty and doing that. Now, me and my best friends, we do have a camp now, and this year was our first full year with it. And so like we're doing some minor things and looking at the property in a different way than what we would normally, I guess, just look at a piece of property and being like, okay, where can we hunt? We're, you know, figuring out the strategy side of things. Whereas now, like you said, okay, we're given this, what can we do to enhance the habitat for not only wild, like for whitetail, but for other species of animals. And so it is, I think, like you just said, I think that's an overlooked, undervalued, if you're not in it, right? Like how someone, like what you just said to kick off that answer was, it's probably an answer that you're not expecting. And it really wasn't. And so like, I feel like that's like a, just an overlooked position, but it makes total sense. So now that's a win. And let's talk about maybe some challenges and threats, which I think you already alluded to a little bit, but like, where do you see nationally and here at the state of Pennsylvania are some challenges and threats that like are looming over us?
Yeah, it's two parts. So I've talked about diseases. You know, they're out there. They are what they are. Starting to worry a little bit about overpopulation in a lot of areas. Even here in Pennsylvania, the other day I was driving over to our local range to shoot my bow a little bit, and there's five deer standing there, you know, right in town standing on 9th Street. I mean, that's not a good thing, right? That's right. Because we're overpopulated around town here in some other areas, and there's nothing disease likes more than overpopulated deer herd. Mm-hmm. So that's a problem. But I think subsequent or parallel to that is just this growing lack of acceptance of science. People going out and purposely spreading misinformation, or because they don't agree with something or something is inconvenient to them, then they go out and say, well, this isn't true. Or, CWD is prime for that. You've got people who over the course of decades grew a national following, and so they're looked upon as experts. And then now they're saying things like, oh, the group, you know, the NDA is crazy. They don't know anything. And this is all a hoax. And someone's making money on this. And, you know, it's all made up. Show me one, you know, I've seen this one. Show me one deer that died of CWD, which is, blows my mind, because you know what? Let's take a ride down to Bedford County and I'll show you 100. Mm-hmm. And it's just willingly using platforms. You have a platform. Okay. You're using it to, you know, get to the heart of real issues and talk about reality. And some people do the opposite. That's a real threat. Just, you know, because I don't like something or it's something I don't want to hear, that I'm going to go out and spread false information about it is a real threat. It's unfortunate. We see it in other aspects of society. It's not just deer hunting, but I think it's just this failure to want to accept science. You know, the NDA, we don't do anything or take any position that's not backed by peer-reviewed science. You know, peer-reviewed meaning it's not just made up. I just can't go out and say, hey, I did an experiment in my backyard and it's science. This is peer-reviewed science. And we'll always stand behind that, even if it's not popular. So I think that's another big threat that makes me nervous and concerned.
Yeah. Well, that was going to lead into like my next question is like the role of like what the NDA does, bringing in science, hunters, policymakers, you know, I guess maybe... And I'm sure, like you just said, at ground zero in the state of Ohio with the EHD, I have some quite a few friends and the property that I actually have the privilege to go and hunt around and do things. I know they were hit pretty significant as well. I guess, you know, can you share in a recent example of where the NDA influenced a major, like maybe decision or way that you're getting help out there to some maybe groups, organizations, or whatever it be?
Yeah, there are a lot of ways. Sorry, I lost my microphone there.
That's all right.
There are a lot of ways. I'll start with by saying one thing that people may not be as aware of with us is we have a policy arm of this organization that just works on state policy, works on federal policy. Catherine Appling Pooler is our director of policy here. Charlie Buer helps us with our federal policy. I'm in DC, you know, a few times a year, and also working on state issues. And that's everything that impacts deer habitat and hunting. And so, you know, we'll weigh in on, you know, 50 different pieces of legislation during a year that are going to impact deer hunting, okay, in one way or another. I tell people that at any given time, there are probably 100 bills across the country that some way are impacting deer and deer hunting. So there's the policy level. You know, on the disease front, it's putting out good information. It's educating people so that they can make smart decisions. And instead of saying, you know, this is all fake and I'm just going to ignore it, they say, you know what can I do to help with this situation? So we put out the education is another big one where I think we provide a really good service. You know, chronic wasting disease is another example. We helped author the CWD Research and Management Act that currently is bringing about $17 million a year from the federal government to go into research. Our branches, we have a branch network, or some groups call them chapters, that are doing localized conservation on the ground. They're supporting conservation programs. They have really neat outside the box ideas about how they can make great things happen in their community. Our Field to Fork program, you had Elizabeth on, you know, talk about just such a great dedicated talent that we're lucky to have here in Elizabeth and running the program that she does, taking people out hunting who have never hunted before and have always wanted to. I mean, that's an outstanding program. I get excited. I could just go on and on about all the different things. And going all the way back to the roots of this organization, when the Quality Deer Management Association was founded many years ago in the 80s by Joe Hamilton, that was a landmark thing. Because now you just look at the way that people view deer hunting, and it's so much more value added. And I just think about, if this organization had never been created, would we be... It's funny, some of the things we fight and argue about now are because we care so much more and we're doing all these things. And it's kind of like we created Frankenstein in a way. But from start to finish, I think anybody that's been associated with this organization, whether as an employee, as a board member, or as a member... they have to be proud of some of the accomplishments we've had. And we just think that there are so many more to do going forward. So we're excited about the future too.
Well, and that's just it. There's just so much to get involved in, whether it be in policy, habitat work, advocacy. You know, there's just so much we could do to be more engaged as a hunter and help just that next generation. You know, I know that's kind of like a cop out of like, oh, we want, but it is true. We want to things to be better for our next generation, for what we have and build upon that. You know, and it's like a ripple effect, right? Like each thing continuously builds. Like it probably right out the get-go, you weren't going to be able to get $17 million to help on federal money for the CWD. Like you had to do something prior to that. So it was like a ripple effect that helps make that change. And I just think, you know, we as hunters and as organizations like the NDA, that involvement of what you are all doing to bring light, to bring that education piece, is just so vital to that, to help bring and make changes for whitetail and whitetail hunting. Because that's the piece, again, is I think that scientific approach, and that's the aspect that I love and why I was so excited that I finally came up with this idea of having you all on, just because I know myself, it's what I gravitate towards. I know I've had a lot of people and good friends and listeners, you know, just hearing more of asking more, and they want more of that scientific / like people that are in the trenches. And that's what I think about when I think about the NDA. I don't think anybody's just sitting in an office and just a cubicle and not doing anything and just calling people. Like I think of the programs that you guys are all involved in and running and on the feet and in the woods and just talking to people and doing what you're doing to make that change. And I'm just so, again, like I said, I thanked you earlier for all the hard work that you guys are all doing, but it's just putting it out there that way we could all make a change by being involved some way in some form.
Yeah. And I appreciate that, but the reality is the idea and the mission is bigger than all of us. Mm-hmm. And we believe that inherently on our team. You know, our board believes that, our staff believes that, you know, I hope that our members and volunteers believe that. And I want to throw it back to them and say, it's the folks that are willing to do the extra. I said earlier about, it's not about what you can take, it's what you can give. And the people that embrace that are the ones that are really making change on the ground. We facilitate it for sure. And I don't want to, you know, not shine a light on the great work that our team does, but it's, like I said, it's bigger than all of us. And we believe that, you know, we don't just say it, it's not a tagline, and we try to operate efficiently and effectively and put our effort into the mission. So, and I think the results have shown that we're doing that.
Yeah. How do you personally, Nick, balance leading at this national level, but also enjoying your own hunting season?
You know, it's interesting. Hunting had definitely changed for me when I came into this role, deer hunting. I don't want to say it was for the better or the worse, it just changed. And so when I was in my 20s and 30s, like if I was able, I didn't care what the weather was, I didn't care what the wind was, I was in the woods, I was hunting, and I didn't worry about the day-to-day necessarily of what was going on in the world of deer. Now with it being the job, it's almost like coaching, right? So when you're, yeah. If you're like me and let's say you're watching, and I don't know why you would, but occasionally I'll watch the Pittsburgh Pirates. Okay. I have trouble just watching the game and enjoying it without wanting to critique. Well, they got to do this and they got to do that. And it's always coaching, right? Well, it's the same thing with deer hunting. I'm always thinking about deer, but not in the same ways as what I maybe did before. And so I still love deer hunting. I'm super avid. I'm a little more selective about when I go nowadays. Maybe it's because I know more, but as I've gotten older too, I definitely am more focused on the quality of the experience and the journey and not the outcome so much. I still want the outcome. You know, I try hard and I put the time in, but I walk away every day feeling extremely lucky and fortunate to just have had the opportunity to get into the deer woods and chase what is a magnificent animal. And I try not to think about all of the other noise and stuff that gets caught up in the passion of deer hunting. So, you know, I don't know if that's the greatest answer, but it's just different.
Yeah. I, this is going on year six of the podcast for me when January rolls around, and it's shifted every single year. I mean, I would say the last 2.5 years, it's been very similar because it's building those, what you said earlier about going to Delaware and hunting with a close friend and that experience. It is more about that than when years ago I tried to get, as soon as my wife and I would get home from teaching, it would be like, hey, I got some time, I'm going to go in the woods. Like, I don't do that really. And last fall, there was only one day after school that I was able to get out. And that was my only hunt that I did during the week. Other than that, I just did the weekends. I went on trips with my buddies, enjoyed it. And it was a lot more quality. And heck, when you add it all up, it was a pretty good quantity too. But the quality of everything, the experiences, the learning, was just a lot more enjoyable, 100%. You know, so we were just saying about that. Like, what is your approach when it comes to hunting here more? So are you more, do you do a lot of scouting and find your presets? Do you do more of a mobile approach? What kind of setup do you like doing for that?
Yep. The short answer is I do what it takes. So with all these years of experience now, I've racked up a fair amount of experience, good and bad. And so, I have property of my own that I know really well. I still scout somewhat, but I have a general idea of what deer movement looks like on the place. I certainly use trail camera knowledge as well, to have an idea what's there. But I'm fortunate. I'm also adjoined to about 5,300 acres of state game lands too. And I enjoy going out there and finding what's the most recent information. I'm about to do my acorn walk here in another day or two, see where deer are feeding on acorns. And in those cases, it's a mobile setup. So I like to hunt out of a saddle quite a bit. When I can, I just love being able to switch locations and to be able to walk into an area and make a decision based on what I see. I also like to ground hunt, and it's funny, I'm finishing up an article right now that's going to be coming up in our newsletter about ground hunting, and I'm also going to be talking about using a saddle while ground hunting.
Yep. My favorite piece to hunt rifle season is that setup.
Yeah. And so, when I first pitched that to Lindsay, it was like ground hunting with a saddle. I got to hear about this. And so it's definitely archery. That's my first love for sure. I'm all the way down to shooting, longbows and recurves now. I really love traditional archery. But that doesn't mean that I won't hunt with a compound. It doesn't mean that I won't hunt with a gun. But really, if someone said, hey, you got a free afternoon to go hunting, I'm grabbing my longbow, probably grabbing my saddle or just setting up for a ground setup and going out and doing it that way. But I just love getting out there. I love trying to match wits with these things. And I like chasing mature deer. I fill doe tags. I just bought, you're allowed up to 6 antlerless tags. I just bought my final 3 today, so I have 6 doe tags. So I love doing that too. I just love the chase. I mean, these are remarkable animals. I love trying to match wits with them, and it's, I don't take a single minute out there for granted.
I'm with you. I got my my full 6 doe tags as well, and I'm actually, it was funny how it worked out for me this year. I got 2 where I live currently. I have 2 where I hunt back at home in northeastern Pennsylvania, because it's where the camp is with my best friends. It's where I hunt with my dad. And then I have 2 also in the heavy populated 5C unit where my best friends live. We were just talking today. I was like, hey, what's the game plan for the September opener for you guys? And they're like, come on down, let's do it. I was like, well, I have 2 doe tags, so I have 2, 2, and 2. So I'm super excited. I hope I have the opportunity to fill a couple of those. Not only that, do I like to do that for myself and my family, but I mentioned it earlier on another episode, is that I love also donating to the program as well. I just think that's such a cool program. It's free. And then at the end of the year, you get a nice little letter about information regarding it and a cool sticker for that year. I just think that's just a neat way to also somehow, some way you're giving back. So I'm pumped to hopefully fill some more tags this year. So that way I could do that. So, yeah, I'm really excited for this upcoming year. And, you know, so talking about that and with that, Nick, if you could challenge every Pennsylvania hunter to take action this year for the future, what's something that you want to challenge them with?
That's a great question. And I've thought about this a bunch, and I've even said this before, but I think it's still true. And that is, do one more thing than what you did before. Challenge yourself to do that one more thing, because the reality is, there are deer hunters like you and I that put in a lot of time, a lot of thought. We listen to the podcast, we host a podcast. Mm-hmm. But the majority of hunters are really, they're going to think about it a few days before the firearm season. They're going to go out and sight their rifle in, hopefully. And they're not going to think about it. It's just a hobby that they do a few times a year. And so that group in particular, I challenge, say, just do one more thing. You know, that might be what you just said, donate a deer. I think I shot, it was 6 deer last year. I only kept one. I donated all the rest of them. Okay, that's a wonderful thing. You know, people can use the meat, and you're helping get some deer off the landscape and have the enjoyment of hunting. Maybe it's, you know, take a friend hunting with you. Maybe it's go participate in a cleanup day with your local sportsman's club. Maybe it's to send a letter whenever we send our action alerts out for policy. It's just writing, you know, clicking two or three times. We make it so easy to send a letter to your legislator saying you support a piece of legislation. That's really it. If ever you think about the, you know, millions of deer hunters across the country, if they all just did one more thing, what an impact that would make on deer and deer hunting. So I just ask people to pick that thing, do one more thing than you would have done before, and build off of that.
Yeah, I love that. Well, Nick, one last question before we get off the line here. Your perfect setup in the state of PA, what time of year is it? What are you set up on? A scrape? Are you set up over like a nice little bedding area? A little transition area to bed the food. What's your perfect setup? What time of year is it? And what is that opportunity for you?
I think it depends on the outcomes. I don't want to give you a double answer because I tell people, if you want to kill a big deer, your best chance is right at the beginning of the season or in the winter. But I've shot a lot of nice deer during the rut. So if you're saying, hey, what am I going to get the most enjoyment out of? I like nothing more than a cold, frosty November morning. Let's say, we'll say November 10th. And, you know, I go out and I'm hunting a likely travel corridor where bucks are cruising without does. And I'll sit there all day. And just to be part of it. I mean, there's nothing like, I mean, and unfortunately it's sometimes hard to get a shot at a deer like that, cause they're might be chasing a doe or on the run, but, that's it for me. You know, when I think of deer hunting in Pennsylvania, that's what I think of. I think, you know, maybe there's just a few leaves left on the trees. There's a lot on the ground. It's a frosty morning. You're cold, but every time you hear a twig snap, you're excited because you don't know what's coming. So that's probably it for me.
Oh, very well said. That fires me up. I'm ready to go hunt on that one. Nick, I greatly appreciate your time and your effort for what you do for your day-to-day job. But I felt like this was such a nice, fun conversation. It was laid back. It was relaxing on especially on my end. I felt like hopefully the audience, I didn't hear just Nick, the CEO and president of the NDA. I heard that aspect, but I heard Nick, the hunter as well, and the individual and the coach. Thank you so much, man, for your time. And again, for all your hard work and dedication, I greatly appreciate it. And again, I know I asked everybody else, on the podcast the last couple of weeks is regarding the NDA, but again, where can people maybe find you and also more information about the NDA?
Yeah, deerassociation.com. If anyone uses URLs anymore, just do a search, Deer Association, and you'll find us. We have all of our information right there. Lindsay and his team do a great job of presenting it. We're on all the socials, you know, we're on even on TikTok, put a lot of great stuff out there. So you can find us pretty easily. Personally, I'm just Outdoors Nick P on Instagram and I think TikTok. And if you're that bored and you want to find me, you can come check my stuff out too. But I want to say thank you too, Jeremy, because you know, it's folks like you that are going the extra mile to do this to help. It really helps get the word out. A lot of times, you know, people can be skeptical of organizations like ours, and I think more trusting even of folks like yourself that are just out there interacting and they want to hear some of these good questions that you've asked. So we appreciate you and you giving back and doing that extra thing as well. So thank you.
Anytime, Nick. Well, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy these episodes as much as I did recording them. I'm going to miss. I got to get fired up again and figure something else out because I thoroughly enjoyed these conversations. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Please go check Nick and the rest of the team out at the NDA, and best of luck to you out there. Wear your harness. Make sure you're tied in on your saddle, everything you have going on. Be safe. Have fun. We'll see you next week, everybody, and antler up.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Antler Up Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. Please go check us out on our Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and at antlerupoutdoors.com. If you enjoyed this episode, go leave a review and subscribe for next week's episode. Until then, Antler Up.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.